The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership. Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place yours. Today's Your Care Partners is part one of a three-part series where Jill and Marty interview Don and Christy Talbot, who are well-known in the Alzheimer's community.
Hi, welcome to WWER 88.1 FM. I'm Marty Allman.
And I'm Jill White.
And we're Your Care Partners.
Today we have quite an honor. Marty and I are going to be speaking with Christy and Don Talbot, who have been on a very special journey, and they've been sharing it for years, and it's information that's hard to come by, especially when you have the care partner and the person that's dealing with the disease who can still communicate so clearly and so honestly. So thank you guys so much for continuing your efforts. We're very thrilled to welcome you.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
All right. So I guess what we can maybe touch on initially is start a little bit by telling us about your personal journey with Alzheimer's and what inspired you to write the book, Alzheimer's, Don's Faithful Journey.
Well, I think at the time, I was really going through a lot. I mean, I was only, 42 years old.
He was having problems when he was 39, and he was finally given the diagnosis of Alzheimer's at the age of 41.
So, you know, it was a lot going on at that time. I was at a point in my career that, you know, I had other plans and wanted to continue working and all these things. Now, all of a sudden, the doctor tells me, you have Alzheimer's, and you should go home and get your affairs in order.
Mm.
That's what he told me. So,
unbelievable.
Yeah, so there I am, early 40s. What am I going to do? What's my family going to do? My son's still younger. I mean, you know, what in the world
and unfortunately, a lot of the guidance people who are newly diagnosed with this disease get that you're going to need to go home and get your affairs in order. And
which is not bad advice.
Right.
Right.
I'm not telling nobody not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's typically where the sentence ends. It's not an ongoing conversation of what to do next.
Yeah, the resources are not made available to you at that point, I'm sure. And
right.
I would think just facing it at that age has a whole lot of other roadblocks because people don't expect it, maybe don't believe it, you know, are not there to assist the way they might be decades down the road when it's more.
Well, and I think there's some other mental challenges there that went along with it.
Uh-huh.
If you talk to somebody that's, say, 70, and they come down with the, you know, they get the disease and it starts to show its ugly head, even the late 60s.
Uh-huh. Right.
Those people have a big challenge, but their financial affairs
mm-hmm.
are pretty much already in order.
Or they're ready.
They're already retired,
yes.
9 times out of 10.
Or planning to.
Or planning. They have, you know, they're taken care of.
Yeah.
At 42, you don't have that. You know, I got kicked out of a couple, well, not kicked out of, I wasn't allowed to participate in several studies because of my age. I was too young.
Yep.
And there was also the stigma of being younger at work.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a managerial role and, you know, everybody looks at you like there's nothing wrong with him.
Exactly. Because you look young and healthy, you know, and
you look young
and
healthy.
The same.
There was a poem I think I wrote in there called The Unseen Me.
Oh, yes.
And that's pretty much why I wrote that book, because there were so many different things that happened along the way that I just wanted. There are so many people out there right now I know that have the disease that can't even speak. Or if they do speak, it's more like a talk salad.
Yeah.
And the, how about the ones that can't speak?
Mm-hmm.
And there they are. They can still think and reason just like you and I.
Mm-hmm.
But they just can't talk to anybody and get their frustrations out or tell them how they feel. That's what sparks Christy and I.
Mm.
We want to be a voice to people that don't have one. And I just, I cannot imagine going through this and not being able to yell or scream or
communicate.
Kind of way.
And one of the biggest differences between the time when Don was told he had Alzheimer's and now, that's been 16, 17 years now. And the big difference was back then, not many people talked about Alzheimer's. A lot of people did not want people to know.
Nope.
They didn't want to share. And we are still finding certain communities even today where people may have this disease and they're suffering in silence or alone trying to deal with everything that this disease brings with it.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the biggest thing that upsets me and why Don and I continue to push to help people when they are looking for some sort of road to help them in what's going on. So that is a good thing. It's better now. More people are talking about it. It's a lot better than we first started on this journey.
But there's still a lot to learn too. I mean, I remember just a few years ago, we spoke at a senior event somewhere.
It was a senior fair.
And after we speak, we always leave time for questions. And this one gentleman raised his hand and he asked, my wife has it. Is it contagious? I mean, that tells you what you're dealing with as far as, and I'm not using the word ignorant in a bad way.
No, but the absence of knowledge of a certain condition, which, and it still carries through today, even through the medical field, I think.
We've run into roadblocks with doctor's offices.
And we've also learned that there's no stupid question. People that are asking questions like that, they want to know.
Sure.
They may not have access to find out those answers. And quite frankly, they might not have time. Being a caregiver is a 24/7 job.
You're right.
Some people don't have the luxury of being able to get on a computer and research and talk to people and go to lectures. They're watching someone who wanders 24/7 or can start a fire in the home or can hurt themselves. Those are the kind of things that we see.
Yeah, if they're looking for help, it's usually rarely for themselves. It's for their person they're caring for or taking
care of. That's right.
Well, just to interrupt for a second, I kind of thought of a question. Like you were talking about, you know, doctors and almost seeming like, you know, there's not a lot of information for them, or I got the impression that, you know, you guys are sort of, you know, informing them of the disease process. So I was wondering, you know, what ways have you found to collaborate and communicate with healthcare professionals, either involved with you all or at large?
Now, we used to have, and I don't think it's being run anymore. There used to be a community, what was that meeting where we had the sheriff's office?
Yeah, they still have fairs going on and what we mean by a fair, it's a community. They may be talking about what to do in emergencies, what to pack, where to go, but they also have doctors.
Representatives from different.
Yes, representatives from hospitals, different doctors come in and speak. We get to come in quite a few times. We've been able to come in and talk a few times. And it's just a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, when you're talking about someone helping take care of someone with Alzheimer's, they may not be able to bring their loved one in that kind of situation. There's a lot of people, a lot of talking going on.
Yep.
So I feel for those people, and those are the ones that we like to try and reach. And mm-hmm. podcasts are a great way to do that, because they can have it on while they're taking care of their loved one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what we did was we really wished that when we were told Don had Alzheimer's, that number one, they told us about the Alzheimer's Association. Since COVID, our Alzheimer's Association really
gone.
There's not as much meetings going on, not information getting out like it used to in our area and other areas from what I hear from people.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get back on track. I think they've got good programs coming in. But that, you know, I wish they would just tell people to start with about that.
Yes.
Also, the fact that I'm afraid sometimes there are doctors that really aren't the best people to be treating a person with Alzheimer's.
Right.
They don't let that person know. You know, you may yep. want to go to, for instance, our area has the Center on Excellence in Aging, where
mm-hmm.
a team is built around you as a patient.
Mm-hmm.
And they help you locate certain doctors that will know and understand what you will be facing. And it's not only the doctors, it's having home health, having nurses. What happens to your loved one with Alzheimer's if you, the only caregiver at the moment, get sick and have to go in the hospital?
Right.
It's more of a full range, let's get a plan in place. The worst feeling in the world to me is to know my husband is going through something and I don't know where or how to help him. That's the worst feeling for me. And so that's the kind of things that we look at here. Like we have the memory care navigation through Riverside on
mm-hmm.
the Center for Excellence in Aging and Lifelong Health. They are wonderful in our local area. Also, Bay Aging is an exceptional mm-hmm. place to get information. When we got to the point where Don was really having difficulty being in a car. When I had doctor appointments, what we say across the river, about an hour away from where we live, we found a good, loving, safe environment that I could put him for the day.
That's
affordable. They feed them. They take care of them.
Perfect.
And Don has certain things that he can and cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, they're taking a time, they sing at a certain point. Well, then they will put his headphones on and so that he doesn't hear that. That's one of the things that gets Don going
is yeah.
the sound of music, which
yeah.
is, and Don was a musician, and that's one of the ways we found out he had Alzheimer's, is that he was messing up when he was playing and like in our church band. And
you know, one of the things you mentioned in the book, Don, that kind of like a trade-off, the fact that you lost the ability to, you know, make music again or continue to make music because it had been such an integral part of your life. But conversely, the fact that you are able to communicate so clearly and so succinctly and so beautifully and so honestly is really kind of miraculous in a way.
It's a gift from God.
We
believe that.
Mm-hmm. And
I don't know what the reason is right now. Christy mm-hmm. doesn't know what the real reason is
Well, I do. I believe that God has a reason for Don to be able to still communicate. And one of the reasons that he has that ability is that right after he was diagnosed, we did a lot of research and found trials, free trial match. And Don was one of 40 people. He was the third in the world to receive a deep brain stimulator at Johns Hopkins in Alzheimer's research. And that is truly the reason he's still able to communicate as well as he does. When that device is turned off, he has a lot more difficulty. But God led us on that path. God showed us what we needed to do to get that age limit down so that he could participate. And we've always said that God has led us through each door. And I believe that God led us Johns Hopkins so he could get this EDS, so he could express the feelings of what it's like living with Alzheimer's.
So such an impact. You both are such amazing. Mm-hmm. You're messengers. You are definitely messengers.
Yeah, I agree. It is pretty amazing. And I believe part of your all's journey, because there are so many people that don't know what it's like to have this disease and to go through what you guys have been through and be able to communicate it. I mean, that's a gift. It's just a gift. I'm sure it's helped so many people, you know, who are either beginning this journey or maybe in the middle of it and have a better understanding of what their loved one, you know, is possibly going through.
I think it's little things that we try to tell people that just make daily life a little better. Like if there's a family gathering, don't get mad at Uncle Don because he goes in the other room and around the kids and the dogs running around. He's not being mean or ugly. Yeah. And we're open and honest with our family, so we don't have any of that.
Right.
We don't, but there are so many families that
they don't want to talk about it.
Yep.
Where they insist, you know, the baby sits on somebody's lap or come over here, let's get a picture with so and so.
And that's something all of our family and friends know, that Don absolutely cannot participate like he used to. I'll tell you I've had two real lessons, actually three, but in trying to understand. And I think for a caregiver, you feel bad when you're quick to criticize or think badly, you know, well, he's not trying or whatever. And I wanted Don to explain, we hear a lot of times about caregivers trying to give their loved ones a shower or a bath. And I'd like for Don to tell you what it's like for him.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
You just said something a minute ago that it was overstimulating.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happens to me with a shower.
Wow.
A lot of times. My skin is so sensitive. I mean, it'll drive me crazy. I can't really stand in a shower face first. Because the stimulation off my face just absolutely drives me crazy.
Wow.
So if there's someone out there that maybe is having a trouble getting their loved one to shower, maybe try a bath, a warm bath instead. Mm-hmm. Something like that that's not so invasive as a shower.
Mm-hmm.
And
the other thing we saw one day was that where I was telling you that Don goes to what we call daybreak, they try to do little crafts and so forth. Well, Don actually started going to daybreak as a volunteer, helping with crafts and with the local Alzheimer's lady that we, dear Ellie, we grew and we still love her today and keep in touch with her. But what happened one day was they went up there to do a craft and everybody was given a piece of paper and some crayons or pencils, colored pencils, and everybody was drawing. It was a paint day. And everybody started, but there was one lady that just sat there. And 10 minutes went by.
Nonverbal.
Yeah, nonverbal. 10 minutes goes by. And most of us would say, oh, Miss So-and-so, you don't have to do this right now. Let's take you over here so you can watch TV, something that she enjoys doing. And instead of that, Ellie gave her the time to sit and look at. And finally, after 15, 20 minutes, she picked up a color. And each step along the way, which might have taken someone else only a minute to do, it may have taken her 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. But wouldn't you say, like, after 45 minutes, started to draw?
About an hour, hour and a half later, she was finished.
You know, Don and Christy, I actually took a picture of that woman's painting, because to me, you know how they say a picture's worth a thousand words?
Yeah.
That to me was the most powerful message about patience. Yeah. Give time, give time, give them time, because you're not processing quickly. You're not responding right away. And most of us tend to, like, especially me, a type A, just ask the next question or I'll just move along.
Or you'll that
person
answer,
is formulating an answer and I've already passed.
Or you'll answer for that person.
Oh, the worst. Yeah.
You know, we all do sometimes. Well, that's a beautiful.
One of my big things that I'm dealing with, and I understand the other side of it. I really do. Uh-huh. But if somebody asks me something and I don't have an answer right that second, they will give me, well, don't worry about that. We'll talk about it later. Well, no, I'm already in the middle of thinking about it. Now you really threw a monkey wrench in everything. Uh-huh. You don't know or not.
And then he gets upset and that anxiety, you know, just a, when he
triggers.
When he looks at a menu at a restaurant, he knows what he wants. Then the waitress comes up and says, what would you like to drink? Mm. And, oh, well, now he's got to think about that drink. And while he's thinking about it, he forgets what he wants for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And then I start up, well, would you like, I know it's either going to be sweet tea or Coke. Well, then he gets upset because I've talked to him. He's still processing the first question.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you have to have that pause and let him think.
How have you guys, you know, in your relationship, and this may be personal, and I'm sorry if it is.
We're 100%.
You can ask anything.
Open door.
That's what it's all about.
So, you know, I know that you've had those moments, and God love you for going through them. Have you guys developed a way to kind of, you know, say, hey, that's getting on my nerves. Give me a second to, you know, to think about this, or hey, Don, you know, we don't have time for that right now. So how have you guys adapted or cope, or how are you coping with, you know, those situations in your relationship?
I think we've tried a couple strategies. Mm-hmm. We've tried several. I mean, just what you said a minute ago, hey, that's really bugging me. You mind? Or she has tried to warn me. Now, Don, we're going into this place and it's going to be this, 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 and this. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes those things don't work. I mean, we still go into somewhere and,
for instance, getting a haircut.
Mm.
If you go in and get a haircut, no matter where you go, they've got loud music going.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
That's one of Don's triggers.
Mm.
Then on top of it, usually, I realize that there are men barbers and stuff like that, but usually there are women in the building and they are talking and talking. And,
wow. Like a bunch of hens.
And then they start to cut Don's hair. They'll start to cut Don's hair and they want to talk to him and they want to ask him questions. And all Don wants to say is shut up and cut my hair.
Yes.
You know,
right.
And he actually did one time say something to the girl that was cut, because every time she started talking, she stopped cutting his
hair.
She
couldn't talk and cut it.
Oh my God.
It was really irritating.
So she would stand there. She would stand there and pretend to cut my hair just by going click, 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 click with her scissors.
Oh, gosh. Oh,
please shut up and just cut my
hair. Really? Yeah. This so is kind of weird, Christy. And I remember, because I still have some of the cards that Ellie used to hand out that just said, please be patient.
Yeah.
You can give to a server or someone. I'm just thinking, when you're doing routine things, would that be uncomfortable to have a little message of, you know, I prefer to be quiet and not interact much or have conversations?
No, and I think that's perfect. My job is a caregiver every day from the time Don wakes up, time Don goes to bed. is to help him make it the most successful day that he's ever had.
I love it.
Does that mean yesterday's perfect day is going to be today's perfect day? Heck no. We can't even say 5 minutes ago, I can use the same schedule. For instance, like we knew we were going to be speaking with you this afternoon. So that meant that we needed to stay home all day long and not do anything so that Don hadn't wore himself out, that he didn't overly, you know, have someone talk to him. And because once he's done talking to you, he will be finished for the day.
It gotcha.
Takes every ounce of energy he has to concentrate on your questions and think about what he wants to say and listen to a conversation with more than one person. It's very difficult for someone like Don to have multiple people in a conversation.
Well, I will say that I'm starting to have problems. And it's only, well, it's probably started in the past 6 months, especially having problems understanding what people are saying if I'm not actually looking at them. So it's like a process thing. If I look at you, it's almost like I'm reading your lips at the same time.
Or your body language or the person's body language.
Yeah. It's been a really, really strange.
So it's just like you're using more than just one sense. You're just not using ears.
And if you're not looking at him while you're talking, typically he doesn't understand what you're saying to him.
Okay.
It's kind of strange to explain.
But. Right. Oh. So what I was saying was that we try to do things that are going to help him be more successful. Now, when Don was first diagnosed, and I would say for 10 years, our goal and what made him happy was being out in the public and talking about this disease, spreading the news about what people can do right after they're diagnosed, what to do during each phase, and how to help your loved one get through each stage. And now, the last several years, I've had to try and help him be successful in a different way because he can no longer be comfortable in large crowds around a lot of stimulus. So that means he does not go in stores. He does not go on more than maybe a 10-minute car ride because the car is a trigger for him now because that is a lot of stimulus coming at someone.
It's almost like a self-preservation mode. Like there's a good chance I could get hit in the car and get hurt. So I like being, we have an acre of land here. I like being on this property. If I have to leave, I mean, it's not like I start kicking and screaming and bawling or anything.
Mostly if there's food involved.
But there is an anxiety. there is a certain amount of anxiety.
Well, that's your security. That's your safe spot.
Yeah. So when you're sitting in the passenger seat, I mean, even as not having Alzheimer's, some people make you nervous.
And things change as the disease progresses. Like if we have a thunderstorm, you are not going to catch my husband going outside. Whereas 20 years ago, we had a little wind burst come through. I thought it was a tornado and Don's out in the middle of it. Wow, look at all this. You know, he does not go out in a storm. He doesn't like being in the car. There's only a few real safe places that he feels in.
I actually had a panic attack one time.
Yeah.
Oh, Don.
It lightened.
Yeah.
Outside. I thought I was going to die.
He actually thought he was going to die.
Frightening. You know what just came to me, Don? And I think the reason you guys do so amazingly well, obviously it's not perfect and it's nothing you would have chosen, but the fact that you can communicate not only to the world at large, thank God, but you two seem very, very, very much in tune to one another so that you can thankfully tell Christy I don't like mm-hmm. that. I don't want this.
Yes.
You know, and she can then adjust and adapt what's going on around you. And so many people can't do that.
Right.
Well,
can I say something to that?
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of that, while Don can communicate and he's doing very well today, there are maybe, I would say 70% of the time,
uh-huh.
his urge to communicate is not there.
Huh.
And so when we want him and when he wants to communicate for something such as this program, we make sure that everything leading up to it, he went to bed early last mm-hmm. night, everything leading up to it will give us the best possible outcome that we can get for that time frame.
Really focused. And
what you were talking about the communication, while we do have that, like I said, most of the time, I would say 70 to 75% of the time, he's not wanting to use his words.
Okay.
And that's when a caregiver or a loved one needs to really focus in on what's going on. Try your best not to take the behaviors or the mood personally, because that is a hard one to get past. Mm-hmm. But to really try to be in that person's shoes. For instance, when I have to go to Wally World, which we call, you know, Walmart, to get groceries. I have to go to the post office. There are errands I have to do.
Uh-huh.
And being in the car for Don is, to him, life-threatening. It's horrible. So instead of me having to deal with his outbursts or being upset and it ruining the rest of his day, we talked about, you know, Don, you used to volunteer at daybreak. What would you think if on days I had to run my errands, you could go there? And he said, I would love that. One day he said to me, it was a really bad day for him. And he said to me, sometimes, and it was all because we didn't have dinner at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, you know, I just need to go live in a nurse home. I would know when I'm getting up, when I'm getting a meal, when I can rest. And do you want to talk about how you felt about that, Don? About having a schedule and knowing?
You just said it.
Yeah.
I like eating at the same time. I like getting up, you know, at the same time. I like dinner.
And I think the point of that is it is a controlled environment.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how hard I try to help him have a controlled environment, it's impossible. Life happens, you know. We still believe that having Don around his friends and talking to his buddies is so important. But, you know, people stop by the house and the dog barks and, you know, the phone rings and people are talking and you can't control every aspect. So what we try to do is talk about what are the most important things that we need to do to keep him more secure throughout the day.
Keep that routine in place so that he's comfortable with most of what's going on.
So that's what we really try to do.
Thanks for joining us on WWER's Your Care Partners. This was part one of our three-part series. Marty and Jill's interview with Don and Christy will continue on the next Your Care Partners. If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.